sort of walking through the Four Noble Truths. And today I want to put a pause on that to talk about there's a podcast called On Being. Krista Tippett hosts, the woman in Minnesota might be quite familiar with this podcast. And I periodically teach from this podcast because I find the guests she has are very inspiring and on point. And the other day, I think it was this week, Krista Tippett interviewed a woman called Catherine May, who has a book called Wintering. And I haven't read the book, but I did listen to the podcast a few times. So I thought about waiting till I got the book and read it, and thought, it seems timely now. This concept of both wintering, both the season, of course, that we're in, but also in this time of the pandemic, in a way, it feels like it's been winter for an awfully long time. And this way in which so many of the people that I've been working with and sharing, friends and other humans, have expressed the sense of profound fatigue. I think it was for many of us after the election, and who were pleased with the results, that was a sense of like, great, it's going to be different. And it is and it isn't. And the sense of the fatigue for many of us the last 4 years. But in particular, this last year, we are coming up really on almost a year of this pandemic. And the sense of fatigue and exhaustion. And how do we navigate the bone fatigue here? Excuse me, there's something weird with my internet. I just want to check it. The level of fatigue and the expectation that we should be carrying on as normal, as if we're not in this incredibly stressful time. These bodies, this human body, was not meant to live in the level of isolation that we're living in, and the toll that it takes on the animal body and on the nervous system to have this odd arrangement. I came across a blog of Orin J. Sofer, a spirit rock teacher, wonderful, wonderful teacher. And there's a link in this that he has, his blog was entitled Why Meditation Might Not Heal Your Tiredness, Radical Tiredness, I think is what it's called, Radical something. And this Radical Rest. And what would it be like to actually honor the level of fatigue that's present, and naming both the isolation that we can experience and not being able to go out. And Christine and I were speaking of this earlier, like the doers in this of like going out and doing stuff and meeting people and just being out in the world. And here in California, it's pretty locked down. And I know in other states, it's less locked down. It's less restrictive. I think, Nicole, I know Paris is very tightly locked down. And Nicole, I don't know how it is for you in Germany, but kind of the impact, the duration, the relentlessness of this, and some of the women in this group, we've shared about the loneliness that comes up of like, how do we do this every day? Oh my God, again, I could have waited till next week and honored Groundhog Day, the Groundhog Day feeling of like, oh my God, again, here we are again and again. And the fatigue that can come in navigating this world that's very different than how the animal body wants to live. It wasn't that long ago in the history of our human time that we lived in communities and villages and had multi-generational connection all the time, daily, without having to make a play date or to make time to see people. It just happened naturally. We had our communities around us, and we don't anymore. And this pandemic just accelerated the level of isolation that we can experience, not everyone, but for many of us. And then the fatigue that takes on our bodies. I want to share a little bit from what Orin wrote in his blog. He begins, modern society has an unhealthy, dysfunctional relationship with energy. It's almost as if the fossil fuels that propel our world have colonized our bodies and minds, our hearts. The modern individual is praised and rewarded for pushing through exhaustion, overriding natural limits, and sacrificing any shred of true presence or embodiment for the sake of meeting a deadline, increasing the bottom line, getting the good grade. Right, and we can see this in the pressures on our young ones coming up, in some in the dominant white world privilege of like good grades and good colleges and do this and do that. And for those of us that are more in the marginalized communities, the stress of trying to keep up, to be fighting against a playing field that is so profoundly uneven, profoundly uneven, and the exhaustion that is felt for our brothers and sisters of color, again, when this playing field is so stacked against the success of many of our brethren here on earth, the toll that that takes. The exhaustion is not equally felt amongst all of us. I'm just wanting to name that. He wrote, mindfulness can become a superficial antidote to a deeper malaise of a civilization whose core institutions and community bonds are disintegrating. Just slap some mindfulness onto that weary, ragged soul. Get the better grade, do better. It's tragic how this patterning of pushing through can take over our lives to the degree that in otherwise healthy activities like contemplation, exercise, learning a new skill, become the next set of New Year's resolutions in this never-ending race to upgrade our personality. It's all too common. We unconsciously carry the extraction principle of modern life into our self-care routine, squeezing 20 minutes of meditation into a day that's already too full, right? Oh, I can get my 10 minutes in, or I can do it while I'm doing something else. And this pacing of how we need to keep up with whom exactly and with what exactly. He writes, after nearly a year of living with the fear, uncertainty, isolation of a global pandemic, after the searing pain of centuries of racial injustice on repeat display, after a bitter, intense national election culminating in a violent deadline insurrection, it's only natural to feel tired. When the exhaustion is this deep, when the stressors are ongoing, repeated, and chronic, sometimes the wisest thing to do is nothing. Would you like to allow yourself to stop and rest, to surrender even for a little while to the tiredness? And so I say to you, lie down. Rest your body on the earth. Feel how you are literally held and supported by this vast and generous and breathing planet. So I say to you, rest. And is there any part that's like, I can't? And there are realities to the I can't, in terms of financial needing and needing to push through to maintain the lives that we have. Yes. And how do we honor the rhythm of the body? It is winter. The animal body would like to be hibernating on some level, or being able to slow down, to be in rhythm with the pacing of the earth. And there in the book, Wintering, she speaks about not just the seasonal winter that comes, that the spring is a season of lots of activity and renewal and rebirth. And summer is the gorgeous long days for those of us on this side of the hemisphere. And fall, attending in the harvest that comes. And then the winter, slowing down. The earth wants us to slow down. We do not slow down, most of us. And so we're at odds with the seasonality, the rituals that we would normally have about honoring this season and that season. We tend to just push through them. And how many rituals do we really have in the course of a day, a month, a week, a year? What are our rituals personally, within our own family structures, and culturally? Do we have time for them? Do we push through them? How can we invite in a little bit more ritual to each day as a way of marking a pause of slowing down? In the conversation Catherine May has with Krista Tippett, and talking about this oddness in a way of the nuclear family, that it's a sense of pride that it can be of when you can achieve a sense of independence, and how wrongheaded it is. That it's really, can again, this notion of this isolation in the sense that we can do it ourselves. Really? It's really hard. And just being able to, I'm so curious, as we shift out of this pandemic time into something new. I think we can all agree there is no going back to what was, but the impact that this living the way that we have been for so long, when things do open up in a more reliable, if that's possible, sense, how will this time, what will we have learned from this time in terms of what we want to create and build in this next season that comes after this sort of the winter of the pandemic? What would we like to see happening in the spring that will follow? It makes me think of Lauryn Hill, a line from Lauryn Hill's song, everything is the name of the song, and after winter must come spring. And I find that the refrain of that song in my head quite often, like, after winter must come spring, but first we must surrender to the winter. Again, whether it's the rains and the storms here in California, the snows for other people, for those of us here in the Bay Area, we got some of it's an emergency text about the, I want to say the apocalyptic river, but the atmospheric river that was above us. And it was like, this is an emergency text, and the preparedness, but this way that the seasons of winter say, honey, stay home. There might be floods, there might be snows, it's cold out. Can we give ourselves a period of rest? And if you're like, no, I can't, okay, how do we squeeze out a moment of rest? You know, in the mornings, in the evenings. And again, this is why I think building in a ritual, it can create a way of, oh, okay, I'm gonna take 5 minutes or 10 minutes, not as a, like, I'm gonna squeeze the mindfulness in, as Oren spoke of, but just folding it into the rhythm of our days. Can we reflect upon the rhythm of our days that are, for many of us, quite monotonous or similar? Okay, and then how do we bring a sense of surrender and acceptance to, it is just like this. We are in winter, the body, many of us may be feeling a sense of exhaustion, of fatigue. Okay. Let us put down the fight against, and we shouldn't be feeling that way. Yeah. There's very legitimate reasons for why we might be as tired as we are. So I want to share a little bit from the interview. This wintering, as it is once a season of the natural world, a respite our bodies require in a state of mind, a cyclical recurrent weather pattern, if you will, in any life. Certainly the seasons, the rhythm of the natural world, the rhythm of our needs in our bodies, but also the seasons and rhythms of our life. The book opens up with, some winters happen in sun. Writing is a metaphor for those phases, wintering is a metaphor for those phases in our life when we feel frozen out or unable to take the next step. And they may come at any time, in any season, in any weather. It has nothing to do with the physical cold. Sometimes they line up, sometimes they don't. And when it doesn't line up, if it's the heart of the summer and we can feel this sense of frozenness, of an inability to move forward, we can feel very at odds with the pacing, the expectations. And how do we say, actually, this body right now needs this? There are gaps in the mesh of everyday world, and sometimes they open you and you fall through them into something, somewhere else. And somewhere else runs at a different pace to the here and now, where everyone carries on. How often do we allow ourselves to actually name, I'm actually someplace else. I'm actually somewhere else. The rhythm of this body is not in tune with the rhythm of the go, 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 go. Can we honor that? And can we weather what might be a sense of shame, a sense of, well, everybody else is doing this better than me, a sense of, what does it mean? What's wrong with me? To say, actually, I'm just tired. The winterings we not only live with, but to rest with a W, rest from the winterings, what they can teach us. Not that you would wish for it or wish this thing on anyone else, but you can say, this wintering experience is asking something of us. We must learn to invite it in, to stop wishing it were summer. It is a time for reflection and recuperation, for slow replenishment, for putting your house in order, whether it's the literal house, but I think more importantly, the physical, this house right here, doing these doings of deeply unfashionable things, slowing down, letting your spare time expand, getting enough sleep and resting. This is a radical act now, but it is essential. And I don't know, but I know many of us, in this time of pandemic, sleep has been hard, and that toll that it takes on the body, and an honoring, oh, right. What happens if I don't sleep well over a long period of time? There's a fatigue. So what can I do to restore, replenish? We're coming up on a season, what would normally be at Spirok, the 2 months, the February and March retreat. It's different now. And this, even the seasonality of Spirok, to not have that block of 2 months of the retreat. Christine, I don't know if you feel it too, but it just feels weird not to have it. And a way too, that she speaks of this in the interview, that when we go on retreat, It's like, well, then we're doing something. It still has the box to check. I'm going on retreat. And the way that the wintering is sort of sanctioned in that way, it can be more legitimate because I'm going and doing something and I'm paying money for it. Okay, so that's no longer an option in the way that it was a couple of years ago. But how can we find ways of retreating, not retreating in the sense of, and think of the way it can be in war, like retreating from the enemy, but just a retreating into oneself to be able to rest. You see, the need for rest and the need for shame sometimes are seen as shameful. Like rest is something that you only ever get forced into, or it needs to be commodified somehow. I think we've got this all wrong. Rest should be a part of the simple rhythm of our day and of our week and of our year in different ways. I don't think we know what rest is even anymore, to be honest. I think we have lost track of it. Right? Does this feel true? A sense of what does it mean to rest? There's veg out, there's space out, there's dropping into the vortex of Netflix. Well, what does it mean to actually rest? We've come to see as something that's externally approved of for our own. Oh, wait, no, I'm going to skip that. Okay, I'm going to read two poems and then we'll do a little guided exercise. No. I read one poem and then we'll do a guided exercise. Okay, this one I'm sure many of you know. You might know it by heart. It's Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees 1,000 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees and the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. And ask you to close your eyes. And there was a piece in this interview that I might be able to find in which she spoke about the shame that we can feel about our own fatigue, our own loneliness, our own need to rest. But when we voice it, as some of our courageous sisters here have voiced it, people are like, yeah, me too. There can be a real sense of connection through it. That the need for rest, the naming of loneliness or a stuckness, a frozenness, we've all experienced it. Some of us may be experiencing it now to some degree more than others. Okay. That line of tell me about despair yours and I will tell you about mine. Allowing what is true to be true in this moment with however we're feeling. I think it's Rumi who says, do not surrender your loneliness too quickly. Allow it to tenderize. It's not quite how it goes, but that's the sentiment. How do we open ourselves up to the emotions that can be harder, a sadness? Catherine Ray might say that sadness is sometimes the most simple of emotions, yet we're so quick to step out of it, to move away from it, to medicate it, to distract it. For our kids growing up with this, in this time of their own sadness and anxiety, how often do we want to fix it or shift it? So in this moment, can we allow ourselves to touch into how am I actually feeling? Making space for whatever emotions might be, or there chances are there's more than one. If we hold out this idea of wintering, even in this guided time that we have, what does your winter look like? That makes sense as a question. If you allowed yourself to surrender to a sense of fatigue, exhaustion, what would that mean? And what would that look like? And it might be like, oh God, I can't do that. Okay. So it's not a, we're not moving there permanently, but it's just opening the door. And it might be opening the door a little, or it might be opening the door a lot. What's here? Again, Rumi, we welcome and entertain all the guests that have been sent from beyond. They have been sent as guides. I didn't get that quite right, but the sentiment is there. This being human is a guest house. Can we open the door to our own loneliness, our own fatigue, our own exhaustion? Knowing we are not alone and carrying it, knowing we can offer that to the Sangha that is again stretching state lines, time zones, nations. We are not alone in it. It can feel that way. Can we have faith in our capacity to meet what is here? And if it feels too great to offer it to the circle, to feel in your mind's eye perhaps a connection to these hearts that are beating across the states, into Europe, into Canada. So in this place of perhaps opening that door a little or a lot, to feel into this tenderness of our own hearts, the fatigue perhaps that's present in our own bodies, in the bones. Can we allow this body, this fathom-long form, to rest on the earth, to feel the energies of the earth, to feel the support of the Sangha? I'm going to read this poem by Ross Gay. Sorrow is not my name. No matter the pull toward brink, no matter the florid, deep sleep awaits. There is a time for everything. Look. Just this morning, a vulture nodded his red, grizzled head at me, and I looked at him, admiring the sickle of his beak. And then the wind kicked up, and after arranging that good suit of feathers, he up and took off, just like that. And to boot, there are on this planet alone something like 2 million naturally occurring sweet things, some with names so generous as to kick the steel from my knees, agave, persimmon, stickball, the purple okra I bought for $2 at the market. Think of that. The long night, the skeleton in the mirror, the man behind me on the bus taking notes. Yeah, yeah, but look, my niece is running through a field calling my name. My neighbor sings like an angel, and at the end of my block is a basketball court. I remember my color is green. I'm spring. And letting yourself open that door as well, the door that is spring. To take a moment or two now to consider what is beautiful in your world. The sleeping animal that may be beside you, the snow if it is falling, the puddles in the drought-beaten land of California, the sun if it's out, a favorite book, a favorite pillow, a cushion, a cup of tea in your hand. Look for what is beautiful. Allow this to be the doorway into spring and to know we can hold both. This being is a guest house, a welcome and entertain all that comes, the flavors of melancholy and loneliness, the flavors of beauty and delight in that small moment-to-moment way, to allow ourselves to open up to the whole experience, the whole catastrophe, as Jon Kabat-Zinn said. The painful, the sorrowful, and the beautiful, and the joyful. Can we trust in our capacity to hold and meet it all one moment in a time as things arise and pass away.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.